Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Health Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous, the world famous Health Star Worldwide Network. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds terrible. I should make an echo when I say those words because it's just scary. Now, my usual co-host, Adrian Gruberg of the Caregiver Space today, could not make it because of a physical therapy session, but we're still going to have a very exciting show planned for you today. So stay tuned. Former caregiver to his late wife, Richard Berrier. And the topic today is how to have fun being a caregiver. Yes, it is possible, keeping the atmosphere light and fluffy and not heavy. And anyone who's out there, I want you to call in. Wendy, give us that number real fast.
Oh, sure. The phone number here is 602-494-5699.
Thank you. And you do not want to miss this interview. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they're caring, they're selfless, they're sacrificial. Sounds good so far, huh? Oh, yeah, and they're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, the unlikely event of emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first because you need to help. Wait a minute now, I said that wrong. To put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then, you know, you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. Excuse me, I'm belching a little. My goodness, I wasn't supposed to share that. You know what? It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch. Another ouch, yeah. Just what we need is if we need another process. But unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and you have to go through it. You can't go around it, over it, under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're kind of stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcasts and my books and my videos and my blog. I know you think it's all about me, but it's not. It's actually all about you. So go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and take our short quiz that will assess if you are a candidate for burnout. Caregiverscaregiver.com. And just for doing that, because I'm such a nice guy, I'm going to email you my very first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, absolutely free. Is that nice of me? Yeah, I think it is. Well, I'd like now to take a moment and thank my last week's guests, Lisa Hirsch, author, blogger, writer for the Huffington Post, and her first published book, My Mom, My Hero, which is about a mother, a daughter's bittersweet journey and how Lisa's love for her mother after she became ill was transformed. And also my co-host, Adrian Gruberg, who, like I said, is stuck in physical therapy today. It's a great show. You don't want to miss it. All my shows are on the website, caregiverscaregiver.com. Just check them out. And there are recorded podcasts on the internet forever, as this one will be when we're done. All right, enough of that. Richard, Welcome back, and thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on the show again as well.
Hey, the pleasure is mine. I just want to thank you again for agreeing to come on the show at such last-minute notice. I didn't find out that Adrian wasn't going to be here till about 30 minutes before the show because she got stuck in traffic or something. But Richard was gracious enough to step up to the plate. He's been on the show before, and he has an amazing story, and his story just gets more and more amazing as time moves on. So anyway, Richard, why don't you begin by just telling us a little bit about yourself. Take about 1 or 2 minutes. Just who is Richard Barrier?
Well, I think, my story, of course, big part of it is that I was married to Martha for 30 years. And the last 8 years, she had dementia, and then the last year, she had breast cancer. And the good news about it is that she passed away at home in her own bed, and I was right next to her when she literally took her last breath. And the funny thing about having dementia and cancer at the same time, you don't remember you have cancer, and so you never remember, you don't stress out about it. But so, I mean, it's sort of bittersweet, ha-ha. But as far as who's Richard Barrier, I'm just still sort of figuring that one out because I get to be or become whoever I want to be now. It's just me and three cats, and that's about it.
Cats. You are a cat lover then, I guess, huh?
I like animals in general, but I seem to have attracted three cats.
Or they like you, maybe.
Well, you know, what was funny is this one old cat, she just turned 16, she was a rescue animal. So,
Wow, do they live that long? 16.
Oh, they, it's pushing it. But they can live actually quite long, up into they're 24 years old.
Oh. Wow. So you were married to Martha for 30 years. That is a long time.
Yeah.
A lot. How did you guys meet? Like, was it love at first sight?
Yes, you could say that. I won't go into full details. But after going to happy hour with some buddies, I decided to go to the jacuzzi, and it was, what's the holiday that's in September? Is that Labor Day?
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. Right. And anyway, everybody was off work, so I went to the jacuzzi, and Martha was there, and that's how I met Martha. And we just hit it off right at the beginning, and the kind of thing is like when you go to a restaurant and you both order the same thing, we had to make the agreement, okay, you order something different, I'll order something different, and we'll just share. Because we were so much alike. It was almost crazy how much alike we were.
Yeah, I know. My wife and I are like that. It's just something very interesting about the chemistry about my wife and I is that chemistry between a man and a woman is amazing. You know, it's just... There's nothing else in the world that can make a guy or a girl just go crazy, not eat, stay up at night, feel like you're sick when you're in love. You know, this thing called love that just bites you. I wish they could put it in a bottle and shoot it at people.
Well, you know what? And I'm part of this collaborative book coming up where I actually tell my story from 1978. Mm-hmm. And you talk about... doing things or giving up things for love is I used to do a lot of drugs. And Martha told me, I don't do drugs. I don't do this. I don't do that. It's like, okay, I guess I don't now. So I literally quit drugs. I mean, a lot or different, lots more than just pot. We'll put it to you that way. But I quit all of it cold turkey just so I could be with this woman.
Wow. That's amazing. So now, remind me how long of those 30 years was, you know, the bad times?
It was the last 8 years. One of the things I do is I make pottery, you know, as sort of, you know, it's a part of me. I enjoy making the creative process. And a bunch of us went to Catalina Island, and Martha was sleeping later and later and later. After a while, she wasn't answering the phone when I was in Catalina. And on day three... she starts asking me, where are you? When are you going to come home? And, I mean, I've been planning this trip with my friends for, God, like 4 to 6 months. So, you know, any person operating in a normal capacity, of course, would remember that. And so I realized, you know, I have a problem to solve when I get back, and whatever that is. So that's sort of how it all started.
And now, we spoke a little before. As you know, the topic of today's show is how to have fun being a caregiver. And, you know, that's a very challenging thing, especially when you're dealing, like yourself, with a wife with dementia, and every day is just, you know, you take it one day at a time because you just don't know what the day is going to bring or what terrible things will ensue. And some people are better than others, obviously, depending on their temperament and their nature and their personality. But share what you were saying to me earlier on the phone about, you know, maybe it was difficult for you to try to make a fun environment or atmosphere. But what did you do to at least make some fun for yourself if you couldn't do it, you know, with your wife?
Sure. Well, I think one of the big revelations I had that I had to I've changed a lot, to say the least, and had to overcome a lot of you know, personal ways that I am or I was. And one of them is I had to realize, like, I don't need to be right. You know, it's like I don't really enjoy that much sports, but Martha does. And so I would purposely put on like the Lakers or the Angels or somebody like that and sit there and watch the game next to her. And after a while, I became a fan.
Really?
But so that was one way of my outlets of, you know, really enjoying Martha having a good time. That gave me a great blessing I would have is if I could make her laugh, I just felt it was like giving a gift. I never really thought of it that way, but it's like giving a gift. It's more fun to give than receive.
Yeah.
And as we all know, since we, you know, we're just off the holidays, but to have her just laugh gave me a great deal of pleasure.
Wow. You know, and I read a book. I shared this before on the show. I think it was something, I should look up the title because I'm always crucifying the title. It's something about moments with Alzheimer's and dementia that, that, you know, you might not be able to have a relationship, a normal relationship with someone in that state, but you can always share a moment with them because many of them just come in and out. And I use my mother, for example, because she just died this year. She was suffering from dementia for about 5 years or so. And, you know, she got progressively worse and worse. But we were always able to communicate and share things, find things to laugh about. And even if it's, hey, remember when we did this crazy thing when I was a kid? Because already they're getting younger and younger in their mind, and they're probably looking at you as a small child. And a lot of people don't realize it's not that they don't know who you are, their son or whatever, but they don't recognize you because as they grow younger in their mind, as the older memories start to disappear and they're only left with their I should say their younger memories disappear. They're only left with their older memories. You know, they might see their husband instead of this old, bald, fat guy as a dashing, young, full head of hair guy. And so they don't really know who this character is in front of them because in their mind, you know, he looks like Prince Charming. Or children, the adult children, you know, they see them as a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old. So sharing moments with them, like of your childhood, hey, remember when we used to cook popcorn and we used to burn it all the time, every single time, and it used to smoke up the kitchen, and all of a sudden the light comes on in their eyes and they remember that moment for about 30 seconds and they start laughing and you have a moment and then boom, it's gone. But that moment stays with them for a long time, maybe the whole day, maybe the whole week, and they feel warm and fuzzy about it. Maybe they don't even know why they feel good. But as many of these moments that you can share is very, very beneficial to the Alzheimer's and the dementia patient. And it sounds like that's what you were doing in making her laugh. What are some of the things that would make her laugh?
Oh, just my silly, stupid jokes. You know, just a lot of puns, a lot of sarcastic comments, fun sarcastic comments about, you know, stuff that was going on TV or something like that.
See, you know, the guy who's always got the jokes, you know, and he just tells them over and over and nobody laughs anymore because they're old. With a dementia patient, they're not old anymore. They heard them for the first time, and that's why she was laughing at your jokes because she never heard them before.
No, you're exactly correct. Well, what's fun about Martha's dementia, she loves sports. So I mentioned the Angel game. So she'd watch the Angel game, watch the post show, and then watch the replay, and not remember that she watched the game originally, and thoroughly would enjoy it as if it was fresh. Such a blessing. You know, it really is.
You know, and there's a joke about why Starbucks has been so successful and why Starbucks will actually build a store across the street from another Starbucks. And I heard this on TV, and he says, the dementia patient will be inside a Starbucks having a coffee. And then they're finished their coffee, and they go outside, and they do this on purpose, Starbucks. And they walk out the door, and they look across the street, and they say, oh, look, a Starbucks. And they go over there and have another cup of coffee. And I can't think of any other logical reason for putting a Starbucks across the street from a Starbucks. So that I'm going with that one.
Yeah. No, that sounds right.
So what are some of the things that you would maybe sneak away and try to have fun yourself with? Because sometimes, you know, it's just impossible to have fun, you know, in the same environment. So sometimes we do need to get away and have these outside hobbies and interests, et cetera. What were some of your outlets?
Well, I think I've got two answers for you. The first one would be that I made it a point to stay in contact with friends, because it's really easy to isolate yourself and to totally be immersed in the identity of a caregiver, that I had to purposely call up a friend and say, hey, let's go have lunch. And so that was my two-hour event, because either Martha would sleep fairly late, and I'd have to come home and actually wake her up, or she'd sleep 18 hours if I let her. But that was one event, is just to go have lunch with a friend for a couple hours. But the other thing is, since about 1999, I've been taking pottery classes. I actually have my own semi-private ceramics studio in a much larger ceramic art center. And so I'd go there and I'd just make bowls, make vases, just for fun. It was, again, part of my creative outlet. But part of it is, you know, sometimes it's a little tough to go. I almost have to force myself to go, because here I am having fun and Martha's just sitting at home. Well, granted, she's watching TV. The TV did become a babysitter. And
like we do with our kids.
Exactly. And on to that point, you know, to help anybody out there, how I mentally dealt with it, it's like I no longer was dealing with my wife per se. My identity became, I didn't really want to take one of a caregiver. I took it as I'm now a single parent. And that's how I treated the situation, how I could justify it in my mind so I didn't go crazy.
Yeah, the labels we put on ourselves are very, very important. Just last week, Lisa Hirsch, who, like I said, writes for the Huffington Post, the first thing she said out of her mouth, well, now, first of all, let me tell you, I do not like the word caregiver, and I refuse to use the word caregiver. I am a parent. I am a mother. I am a wife, et cetera, et cetera. And she just, for her, she did not like the term caregiver. And, my wife suffered a stroke 20 years ago, we tried putting her in support groups. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, with other stroke people, and she was a very young stroke survivor, so a lot of the other ones are older, and she just hated it. She does not like hanging around other people in her condition. She likes hanging around normal people because she feels like she's not disabled. She feels like she, you know, doesn't have a stroke. She wants to feel like she's normal, and the only way she can do that is to be around normal people and act normal, and she does act normal. You know, she can't speak, of course, but thus the name of the book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, she's paralyzed on her right side, but half her body is paralyzed, and she lost her language, but she can communicate very, very well because communication is 85% nonverbal. And she's got the tonality. You know, she can say a handful of words, and she can say several sounds like, that you'd be surprised. That can take you a long way. It's almost like the person from another country who doesn't speak English, and all they do is shake their head yes and say, you know, it's like, you understand? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and they don't really understand, but my wife fortunately does understand. Well, listen, we have a lot more to talk about. Let's take a break first. Hold that thought, Richard, and we'll be right back.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on HealthStar Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on HealthStar Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Richard Berrier, former caregiver, and the topic today is how to have fun being a caregiver. Yes, some of you, I can see, just see you scratching your head. Fun? I've never had fun doing this. Well, you know, there's no excuse for that. You are what you believe. You are what you feel. You are what you eat. And if you, I mean, when I had a, let me divert here. When I became a caregiver to my wife, we had an amazing relationship, like you and Martha, Richard. And we just had fun all the time. We were joking around, and I just refused to give that up. And a lot of people are taken back and are shocked when my wife and I joke around and kid around, you know, because to some people who don't know, it looks like I'm being cruel and whatever. But, you know, she laughs, and we're not being cruel. We're just trying to survive. We're just trying to be as normal as we used to be. And so there's lots of things you can do to be positive, to be funny. Don't lose your sense of humor. In fact, if you don't have a sense of humor, you're definitely not going to make it. So share some more stuff, Richard, about your sense of humor and how you made it.
I have a wacky sense of humor. But, you know, that's such a point, because I never, you know, we were talking earlier about identity. I never took the identity of a caregiver. I took the identity of husband, and it was just my turn to take care of my wife.
Yeah.
And because I truly believe, you know, in the marriage vows of, you know, for rich or for poor, in sickness or and or in health. And so, I mean, it's just like, okay, it's my turn. This is as her partner.
Yeah.
This is in a way my duty, my responsibility, because it is.
Yeah, in fact, I remember the first time that I ever heard the word caregivers. We were in the hospital, and someone says, "Well, you're a caregiver now," and I said, "What? What is that?" It's like the word is almost foreign, and they kept using it, and now, you know, I got my own show about caregivers, and so there is something to that about caregiver being a negative term. You know, we don't want it to be a negative term, but to many people it is. And so, you know, whatever works for you. If you don't like the word caregiver, then by golly, don't use it. Use another word.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing that worked out well for me, very good for me, was I've got just a great group of friends who are very supportive.
Yes, that's
important. And what was beautiful about it, Dave, is that when I would see him, wherever that would be, whether it be at school or at work or whatever, they'd say, "How's Martha doing?" That was almost like the first question out of their mouths, and I really, really appreciated that. Just that, they asked that kind of question.
Yeah, during those first 6 weeks, you know, I was living in the hospital with my wife, and really the first 2 years was rough. That was her grief process. Just a lot of anger. You know, anger is a big part of the grief process. Just angry at anybody and everything. And like the Mills brothers say, you only hurt the ones you love, the ones you shouldn't hurt at all. And I needed lots of respite and lots of relief. And thank God that I had a lot of friends and relatives who says, "Listen, I know you're going through a rough time. Feel free to, if you can get away for the weekend," you know, and this is people who live in Nashville, who live in New York. And what's more exciting than hopping on a plane and flying to New York for the weekend or flying to Nashville for the weekend? And it was an amazing time of rest. And, you know, I didn't always let her know where I was going because then, you know, they're very possessive and jealous of you. And I know some people will say that I'm wrong for not being totally 100% honest. But you know what? I was in survival mode. I did what I had to do because I just didn't want to argue about my need to get away and her need to have me there. So I would just, you know, arrange it and do it and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And I'm not recommending that. I'm just saying what I had to do at the time. And I would come back so fully charged with my batteries, you know, ready to go, you know, like Muhammad Ali, ready to take on another round, you know, because you had that 10 seconds of rest and the water and they're fixing your eye. And, you know, caregiving is like a boxing match, like a 12 round, you know, shoot 'em out boxing round that,
because every day
you're
like,
lucky if you survive and you're not knocked out.
Yep. Well, and also by you taking 2 days off, Dave, and getting recharged, that was like you put your oxygen mask on first because you got to be there to help your wife.
Yeah. And she didn't understand. And today she still doesn't understand because she gives me this dirty look, you know, when she hears me tell the story over the radio. You know, it really upset her at the time. And it's still, you know, a very sore topic to her that I did that. You know, and I apologized a million times, but you know how women are.
And, you know, yes, I do.
I may forgive you, but I won't forget. You know, my wife's very sweet. I'm just being funny.
No, I know.
Wink, wink.
Martha would have said the same thing. You know, although she would have looked at me like, you know, out of the top of her forehead. You know, when she didn't have dementia, when we were say arguing, she'd say that's fine. But the look you get, going like, she may have said it's fine, but it's not really all that fine. Just like file that away somewhere.
That's that 85% nonverbal communication I was telling you about. She still has not given up the looks and the stares and, you know, how a parent can just look across the room in a very crowded room at their child who's misbehaving and, you know, they've got that look and they know that when they get at home, they're going to be in big, big, big trouble. And there are positive looks too. You know, all looks are not negative. You know, and that electricity that I was talking about when a man and a woman meet for the first time across the room and their eyes meet, and all of a sudden they just know that they've got to talk to each other and maybe have a drink or whatever. But Wendy, let me know if we have any callers because this is a call-in show.
I'll let you know as soon as we do.
Oh, well, bring them on the line. Did you say we do, or you? We'll keep talking then until they come. Well, so, live radio, huh? It's like Saturday Night Live here.
There you go. Except the jokes are better.
So what type of things have you made with your ceramic abilities?
Ceramics.
Are you really, really good now? Are you selling the stuff?
I've sold some. I mostly just enjoy making it, although... I had to fly out of town during where the studio that I work out is called Muddy Studio in Santa Ana, and I had to fly to Texas when they had their Christmas sale, and so I totally missed that. I have like those big plastic tubs full of pottery that I've made over the last year. One thing I made sure I did after Martha had passed was really get out there and start doing things I hadn't been able to do. Because I had to take care of Martha, and there was no sense of traveling. One thing I did, I drove up to Sierra Nevada College up in North Lake Tahoe and did a week-long ceramics pottery course workshop with two guys that I've been wanting to go to their workshop for like 10 years and obviously couldn't. The other thing is to bring up to the point is I have a brand new 2015 Mustang, so I'm looking for reasons to drive places. So there was North Lake.
This sounds like a midlife crisis, but we know that it's not.
No, it's not a midlife crisis.
You're single and you're not having an affair and you didn't get a divorce.
Exactly. Yeah, really. I am looking for a hot blonde. No, sorry, never mind. But one of the other things I did is I
you just
drew
might find one too.
Actually, I'm a Martha was a what are you talking about?
Martha was a curly-haired strawberry blonde.
He's curly available, ball. Wendy.
And it got quiet on the radio all of a sudden. No. Yeah. But one of the things I did is I drove out to Flagstaff for 2 weeks to Northern Arizona University and took a what's called a wood-fired class, where you literally load the kiln up with your pottery and put in wood, but you let it burn for like 2 days straight. Something really? And literally, I mean, you have
and what
flames
does that
coming
do?
Out of. It's just a look. There's no glaze on the pieces, so what happens when wood burns? At a certain temperature, it actually melts. So in the thermodynamics of the kiln, as you throw in the wood, it flows through the kiln, you know, in between pieces, around, on top of pieces, all over. And at one point, it lands. It sticks, and then it melts in place. It's a very fluid, organic look. And totally random. I had some really nice pieces and some really not-so-great pieces come out. But that's sort of the allure of wood fire is you don't know what's going to happen. And their pieces just are drop dead gorgeous. But, you know, I literally drove out to Arizona with three large tubs of pottery and all my tools and about a dozen CDs and had a phenomenal time. Made a lot.
You should make a website page and put all your stuff on there, and you might be surprised at what sells. Now, Wendy, do we have a caller?
Yes, we have Denise on the line. Let me go ahead and put her through.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Here she is.
Hello, David.
Hello, Denise. Welcome to the show. And you're
Thank
from the
you.
East Coast. I can tell from your accent.
I live in San Francisco now. Yeah.
So tell us who you are, Denise, and I assume you're a caregiver. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I live in California, and I'm from Pennsylvania. So my mother was really getting weak mentally. So I was told to come back east and try to figure out what was going on by friends of hers. So I went back east, and I discovered that the county people had gotten involved, and they declared her incompetent, that she was not allowed to live alone anymore. So I had to stay back east for 6 months and try to find a place for her. So I did that, and then I had to sell the house and manage her affairs, and it was really quite complicated. And mostly, after I was back east for 6 months, then I came.
Are you there?
I'm here, Dave.
Did we lose Denise?
I think we lost her. I'm going to call her again.
Yeah, when Denise is on the line, we lose Richard. When Richard's on the line, we lose Denise.
I don't think they get along. Right, Richard?
I have a bad feeling about Denise already.
All right, let me go ahead and try to get
her. If it doesn't work, we'll have her call in, okay?
That'll be good. Okay, hold on one sec. You guys keep talking. Talk amongst yourselves.
What were you saying, Richard? I have a very short memory.
I forget, too, so... no, it's just, you know, when I went to Flagstaff for 2 weeks to take the class, I made a lot of new friends and had an experience that actually you can't really get in California because of all the, you know, people see a bunch of smoke coming out of a chimney. And we're talking the stack is like 30, 40 feet high. Wow. And flames are coming out of the top of it and smoke is billowing from that. So that's okay in Arizona, but it's almost like you'd have to be like in Temecula or someplace not really close to a major city of any kind. Mm-hmm. Because people freak out about seeing all the smoke and pollution and things like that. But there's really not a whole lot, you know, compared to a lot of other things, not just cars.
So how many things have you made and are, like, in your garage, like 1,000?
Oh, my God. Oh, my studio, I have a warehouse, my apartment is full of ceramics. And not only stuff that I've made, but from other friends and other people I've collected as well.
Mm.
So,
wow. Like I said, I'd love to see some. You never know. I could be an appreciator, is that if that's a word,
yeah.
Of art.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I typically, not for the last couple of years for obvious reasons, but I typically would do demos at the OC Fair in the Crafters Village. Uh-huh. And I've won awards, first, second, and third place for 2 years in a row in the fine arts section at the OC Fair.
Wow. Well, that's recognition right there.
Yeah.
So tell me, well, first let me share some things that I've done because I think it's important to give people ideas on how they can make, you know, their caregiving existence, you know, more productive and more beneficial and more positive, because whenever there's negativity, no good comes from it, you know.
Right.
But what I used to do, oh, just a minute. Wendy, how are we doing on that caller?
Oh, David, just a quick question. I do have Denise on the line. Do you want me to go ahead and put her through if that happens?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah? All right, here she is.
It was rude. We got interrupted.
All right.
Hello.
So sorry, Denise. Now, is Richard still there?
No, he doesn't. He and Denise don't get along. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't hear Richard. You might be true. Okay, Denise.
Yes.
We interrupted you. We're so sorry. What were you saying? I asked you.
Well, where was I?
It was Denise. Tell us about who you are. You were saying how you had to fly back to Pennsylvania because they wanted you. Your mother had issues.
Yes. So when I got...
Is she still alive now?
No, she passed away a year ago.
Okay, so... you were more like a long-term caregiver, and I mean a long-distance caregiver. That's the word I'm looking for. Or were you there most of the time?
Yes, I went back east. When I arrived on the East Coast, I was told that my mother had been declared incompetent by the county, so she was not permitted to live alone anymore.
Oh.
I thought about staying back east with her and living with her, and so that she could stay in her house, because I knew she didn't want to move into a facility, but she wouldn't cooperate with me.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't pay her bills. She wouldn't do regular things, and she was sort of fighting with me the whole time, and I realized that I was not equipped to take care of her.
Yeah.
And so I had to find a facility for her to move into because she had dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed back. I found a really great facility for her. She took her dog. We furnished it with a lot of her furniture. She moved into this beautiful place. And after she'd been there about a week, she thought the place was great. So that worked out, and they were really good. Meanwhile, she had a house that she'd been in for 40 years. She hadn't paid taxes in 5 years. So her house and her finances and everything was a real mess, and I had to stay back east for another few months to organize her life and get things sorted out. So that's what I did. And then after I was back east for 6 months altogether, I came back to California, and as the power of attorney and the only child, I was responsible for all of her affairs. And this started in 2009, and it went on until January of 2015. So it was about 5 years altogether where I was paying her bills and talking to her doctors and talking to her caretakers and doing everything, and her lawyer and her accountant, and doing everything from a long distance.
Well, that sounds like fun. I'm being sarcastic.
Right.
So how did you cope, Denise? How did you, you know, how do I say make it fun? How did you make it tolerable? How did you care for yourself? How did you get away and do fun things? I mean, what survival techniques can you give to people who are in your position, mistakes that you made, that you've learned, that you won't make again if the situation ever repeats itself? What advice can you give people in the theme of, you know, having fun, keeping it light, keeping it airy, you know, not keeping it heavy? What have you learned? This is like the Wizard of Oz.
Made,
so what have you learned, Dorothy?
I think I made a lot of mistakes. When I was back east, I had a lot of support because it was my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
When I came back to California, I didn't have any support, and I didn't get involved in any support groups. So I should have gotten involved with some support groups here in the community or even online. You know, I was really isolated, and that was really difficult. I also was overwhelmed by the amount of bureaucracy that I had to deal with, and I really didn't cope very well. Mm. And what I did do, though, that was fun, that was really beneficial, is I started making jewelry.
Okay. There's a good thing.
So a friend of mine, when I was back...
you still do that?
Yeah, I still do. In fact, I've got stuff all over my apartment right now. It seems I'm better at making it than I am at selling it.
Well, so I get sort a website. Of, put it out there for the world to see.
So I sort of went overboard in buying stuff, but it was a way that I could create beautiful things that I could look at, and by making the jewelry, it was kind of a meditative thing. I was working with something beautiful. I was designing something I liked, and then when I was done, I had this finished product, and I made a lot of jewelry for myself, which I'm wearing all the time. Mm. And I think having a hobby where you can express yourself and get your mind off of your problems is really helpful.
Sure. I disagree when you say I probably made too much, spend too much money. You either can give it to a doctor or a therapist or a hospital, or you can make jewelry, you know, so it's not wasted and you have something to look at when you're done.
Yes, and I'm going to give a lot of this jewelry that I've made that I haven't sold to. We have this Dress for Success charity in town, you know, where you give clothing for women who are just starting out or getting back into the workforce and need some clothing. I'm going to give them a bunch of jewelry so they can accessorize their outfits.
How nice. What a nice thing
to do. Yeah, I feel really good about that.
Well, Denise, we're up on our break, so we're going to take a break. And thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate you taking the time, and have a good day at work. God bless you
very much.
All right. Don't go away. We'll be back.
Okay.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Richard Berrier, former caregiver. And are you there, Richard?
Here, Dave.
Good, good. Apparently we've got some things to work out with our phone system here.
Actually, I'm in the tallest building in Scottsdale. Our building is 11 stories high. It's the tallest one in Scottsdale. We just got hit by lightning, and my phone lines are freaking out. So I'm a little weirded out right now because I'm on the sixth floor.
Dave?
Lightning in Arizona. Hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
I hope there's a lightning rod on the top of the building.
Oh, yeah, really? It's the telephone antenna.
It is. It's evil.
Well, listen, okay, that's a good excuse this week, Wendy. Richard, let's take this last stretch of the show and talk about your goals and how caregivers need to keep the faith that what they're going through is temporary, that this too will pass, as the Bible says, that they're not always going to be a caregiver, that one day they're going to be free. They're going to, the prison doors will open. And not to say that, you know, they're in prison, but a lot of people have mentioned caregiving as a caregiving prison. So a lot of people do feel like they're in prison. You know, they were working, they had a career, they had a life, and all of a sudden, boom, now they're trapped inside this house with their loved one. And, you know, some of the situations are not very pretty. I know others do it because they absolutely love doing it, and if they didn't do it, they went crazy finding someone else to give care to. And it takes a lot of different people to be a lot of different caregivers. But for those who look forward to the day when they won't be a caregiver anymore, why don't you share with us how good life can be, Richard?
Wow. You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I've never thought about that. What I am doing, though, is, you know, I went through a year of grief. And there always will be grief, like we've talked about before. But I'm moving forward now, you know, for my goals and things I'm going to do. So,
and share. You have some exciting goals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have big-time goals. But, yeah, sure, of course.
Yeah, what are they?
So
it's the lightning, Richard. Don't let it...
Really. It's raining here in California, too, by the way. I did not know it was going to rain.
I know. Us Californians, we are just not used to the rain. We don't know what to do. I had to go outside to the bank, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, it's raining. I'm getting wet. You're such sissies.
Is the drought over now? Well, moving forward, then.
Yeah.
I never gave it a thought, you know, because a lot of the stuff... as a caregiver, I'm thinking about, okay, next week is the doctor appointment. I have to go to the groceries and get enough food to do this, that, or the other thing. You know, you're always in a planning stage for taking care of the person. So once Martha passed, you know, I've been asking myself this question for over a year now. Who does Richard get to become?
Yeah.
You know what I'm doing? Yeah.
Blank slate.
I'm a blank slate, literally. And so, you know, I was doing, doing my pottery, doing this and doing that. But so part of me realized, okay, where do I want to go? And I have all these physical things I want to do, but I was weighing 230 pounds, and I'm 5'8". And so I've gotten myself down to 210. I've started to do I'm working on getting down to a very fit 175, which is I haven't weighed below 198 since I don't remember. Since like 1990, maybe. And
how do you plan on doing that, by the way, just to interrupt you?
Well, no worries. I started to do yoga. I'm training to do my second full marathon in February 7th. I did my first full marathon back in 2010.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, over the years, I've gone from doing 5Ks to doing half marathons. So I do something called the Surf City Challenge. I'm sorry, the Beach City Challenge, which is Huntington Beach, the OC Marathon, and the Long Beach Marathon, half marathon, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And by completing all three in whatever order, I get a medal. So now I'm incentivized to do three half marathons, and I do the Disneyland half marathon every year also. And I decided to kick it up a notch, literally, or more so, and start doing marathons. Now, these marathons, I'm not running them. I'm just walking them. It's just the point of who do I need to become? What do I need to do to become the person that can do three marathons in a year?
So you walk them. Are there a lot of people that walk the marathons?
Especially toward the end of the line.
How old are you, Richard?
I'm 58. And one of the things I've decided to do, again, I've been wanting to do it for a long time, and I read a book called The Seven Summits that was written in the mid-80s. A good friend of mine, Greg Reed, him and his wife did Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa like about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And through a mutual friend who will be the guide, I'm going to be climbing in Kilimanjaro in June and then going on a six-day safari. The point is, again, how do I need to be? Because you don't want to be going up 19,300 feet and like moaning the entire way.
Yeah.
So, and my dad died almost 30 years ago at the age of 56, waiting for a heart transplant because he had a desk job. He smoked and he drank and he played golf, and that was it of physical activity. And I don't want to become like my dad. My dad was a great man. But the point is, if I'm healthy, what else can I do? I totally forward taste. I have stuff planned in 2017 already. And I'm going on these adventures and building my business and becoming healthy is my two big goals for 2016.
Wow, and I am so impressed, Richard. That is like amazing. I mean, if I was a woman and I was single, you would be a very good candidate. You'd be like fresh meat.
Especially after I get down to 175.
Do you have women like, turning their head when you walk by?
No, but I have some women friends since Martha's passed have become a little more friendly.
Uh-huh. Well, it's only going to get better or worse, however your perspective is.
I think so. And you talk about perspective, Dave. It's like, I'm not in a big hurry to meet anybody.
Sure.
It'll happen when it'll happen, which means since I'm not looking, that's when it will happen.
Yeah, that's the best relationships, the ones that just kind of hit you in the face and you and it usually happens when you give up looking. It's like my one of my daughters tried to get pregnant and, was stressed out over it and she just couldn't do it, miscarriage after miscarriage. Finally, she just gave up, said, I'm going to adopt, and then she got pregnant. And then she got pregnant again. So it's go figure.
I think it's all those stress hormones that are created that was, creating a problem for her. But, the other thing, Dave, is I don't know how egotistical that will sound, but I think everybody should think this way. I have value. Everybody has value. So I don't necessarily have to jump at the first person that could be a maybe. I can wait.
Cool.
Because I have value and I give value, and it's all a bit of mindset of me moving forward with my life.
Well, Richard, we've come to the end of the show, and I would like to thank you again for coming on. Why don't you, in the last couple of minutes, just tell people how they can get a hold of you, if they want to buy some of your pottery or hear more about you or your story, or maybe they want to date you. I don't know.
Well, the one thing that I'm focusing on now, is I've created that phone app that called Text Me Later that saves lives by preventing adults and teenagers from using their phone while they drive. So they can contact me through the website. I'm on Facebook, to say the least. And, right now I've lowered the price. The mindset of people is apps should be free or 99 cents. And no matter what value they give. And so I've totally made the adult model of Text Me Later free. And the teenage model is 99 cents, one-time download. And the website is Text Me Later is just how you would text it. It's TextMeLater.com. And pretty much, like I said, it's a matter of building my business so I get enough revenue coming in, because I believe money is a resource. And so
Absolutely.
If you apply this resource or this asset, so I can go to Kilimanjaro. The other place I'm going in December is Buenos Aires, because this martial arts style that I do called Pacua is having their 40th international gathering there. That's where it started. And while I'm down there, I'm trying to make arrangements with Dean Cardinale, who will be the guide on Kilimanjaro, to also do Mount Aconcagua, that's also in Argentina. And it's the highest peak in South America.
Wow. So, you're one busy boy. Well,
that's okay. I'm not sitting at home. Well, I am now, but.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Richard. You are one exciting guy, and I'm a little jealous in a sense. because I wish I was doing all that stuff. But one day, if not in this life, then in the next.
Absolutely.
So thank you for tuning in, everybody. And thank you, Richard. And make sure you tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern. And Adrian should be back with us next week. So God bless, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, or catch the program anytime, 24/7, right here on HealthStar Worldwide.